Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
What's going on?
I thought you were going to ask me, how's it going? And I was going to say good.
That's different. My normal.
I'm not prepared for this intro.
That's my normal intro. And then I was also like about to introduce Alexa, so I will now introduce Alexa. We have Alexa joining us. Hey, Alexa.
Hey there.
Okay, so Alexa is here because we're going to talk about prenups. And as much as Mike and I love talking about things that we're like mildly educated on, we thought it would be even better to bring on someone who is an expert on the topic. And so that's what Alexa is doing here. So I'm really excited for this topic. Mike, I don't know if you would say you're excited or indifferent.
I don't know why you think I'm not excited for this topic.
Just because I feel like I talk about these all the time and you are just, you know, like.
Yeah, but you talk about all kinds of stuff all the time. It doesn't mean I'm not excited.
That's fair. Alexa, how excited are you to talk about prenups tonight?
I am really excited to talk about prenups.
I like it.
I think prenups often get a bad rap, but I think that they can be really, really helpful to a relationship.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so we're going to get into everything you ever wanted to know about prenups, aka prenuptial agreements. But I want to just first introduce Alexa so you guys know who we have on. Alexa Corton is a family law attorney. She is a partner with Corton and Levine, and it is a law practice in Atlanta, Georgia, where Mike and I live. She was born and raised in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And what I think is such an interesting part of your story, which you had shared with me before, but is also in your bio, is she grew up with divorced parents. And so she experienced firsthand the complexity and stress that can be involved in family law matters. And it's one of the things that inspired you to become a lawyer, right?
Absolutely. And it's also one of the reasons that I'm really settlement minded and conflict avoidant as much as possible in my family law cases.
Yes, which I love about you. And I should, in full disclosure, share that we have actually, myself and Greg, in different ways have used Alexa as our family law attorney.
Now, Maggie, does this mean that once I edit the show, I'm going to get a notice that the whole thing becomes privileged and we can't air it?
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. not without, you're just going to have a long list of legal disclaimers that we're going to include in the show notes. So Alexa went to Emory University for her undergrad. She got her law degree from the University of Florida's Levin College of Law. Most importantly, she is a lawyer and we are not, which is why she is here. And so we really appreciate you coming on to join us, Alexa.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So we are going to jump into a bunch of things related to prenups, and then we're going to get into some like legal specific questions. But as we're talking about, you know, all things prenups, we're going to do our best. And Alexa, you keep us honest, you know, jump in if you're like, that is not even what a prenup is.
But I'd like you to say objection as though we're in a courtroom. Can we do that?
I'm on it.
I like it. Yeah. Every time you want to talk, we need you to say objection.
Yeah, Maggie, can you imagine if we had somebody objecting to all of our stats on all of our episodes? Like we wouldn't be able to get through anything.
I frequently quote things where I'm like, probably 80%. I just make them up. We should have a massive legal disclaimer on this entire podcast now that I think of it, which is something to do some other day. Yeah. Okay. Mike, do you have a prenup?
No, I do not.
Okay. Alexa, do I have a prenup?
I can't say.
That was a trick question.
Maggie, do you have a prenup?
I do. Good question. I do have a prenup and you helped me to prepare it and write it and make it a legal contract.
I like how she's already lawyering on this show. I know.
Like, full disclosure, I have a prenup as well.
Oh, nice. So. I wasn't even going to put you on the spot, but I would hope that you do have a prenup, just given what you do. That would be like, you know, the cobbler's kit, cobbler's shoe. What's the phrase? Whatever. You know? I guess it wouldn't be surprising.
No, I would like you to complete this saying.
It's not the cobbler's kids. It's the cobbler's shoes, right? I always quote the reference. You know, the cobbler has the worst shoes. Hold on. I'm going to get it for you. The cobbler always wears the worst shoes. Mm. You know, he's a cobbler. He takes care of other people's shoes, but his shoes are the worst.
Yeah, but he still wears shoes.
He wears shoes. I don't know what I said. That I'm he doesn't sure wear shoes.
Yeah. Just bad shoes.
Anyways, the point is, it would be ironic if, yeah, you did not have a prenup. But okay, so we got 2 out of 3 prenups tonight. I'm a big fan of prenups. We've referenced it briefly in a number of episodes, and. Before we jump into a little bit more detail on them, we actually did a little bit of a survey on Instagram today, which I thought was actually fascinating. So we asked, we got a ton of responses. So we got a couple hundred responses. So I would say this is statistically relevant. Again, I have no idea. We're just making stuff up. Okay. Do you have, the first question was, who has a prenup and who doesn't? And again, we got a couple hundred responses, and 91% of people do not have a prenup. And 9% of people do. This is just our followers on Instagram. So again,
And for those not watching the video, Alexa is nodding as though this makes sense. This is what you would expect, right?
Yes. Okay. I would say, I think actually 9% might be high. Mm-hmm. Maybe the people that listen are a little bit more financially sophisticated than the average person getting married. Mm-hmm.
They are. I like to think.
I would say it's probably like 3%.
That's wow. Interesting.
I have to guess. I'm pulling that out of nowhere. But.
What's kind of funny is right when I put that story up, I looked at it like 5 or 10 minutes later and I saw it like only a handful of people had replied, but one person had said they have a prenup, and I clicked on the thing because you can actually see who replied. Usually I don't look at it because it's such large volumes, but for that one, I was like, oh, I wonder if I know who that person is. And it was Greg. And I was like, of course you have a prenup. Have a prenup, dude. Thanks for answering my survey though. And so anyways, the more interesting one was right after that, I said, but if you were getting married at this point in your life, like today, at this point in time, would you explore doing a prenup? 71% of people said yes, which I think is so interesting because often people are younger. They don't have a lot of assets. There's a lot of reasons why they don't even think about a prenup. It's got a bad rap. We'll get into all that. But it's just interesting that so many people, most people don't have one, but most people said they would actually consider getting one at this point in their life, which is often a, you know, 10, 15 years in to, you know, being an adult or being married or whatever point people are in their lives. So let's jump into prenups. To share a few more stats as we're doing that, though, it's interesting even just that what we said about, you know, 9% of people have one for in our survey, but you were saying you think it's probably closer to like 3% or something. It's fascinating considering the stats on divorce, right? The rates of divorce are really, really high. I actually tried to look up some real data on this since we're always like quoting the last thing we remembered reading on something. And it's hard. There's a lot of different sources out there, but one of the more common stats is that close to 50%, it's different in every country, of marriages end in divorce, right? And so it is, given that the stat is so high, and it's a sad stat, right? I'm not going to like get into that piece. But given that that's the reality, it is interesting that so few people have prenups. And a little bit of trivia for both of you guys here. What country in the U.S. has one of the highest divorce rates?
What state in the U.S.?
I actually have country and state data, which is why I said that. Let's start with which countries in the world have the highest divorce rate. There's a couple different like sources on this one, but
The United States?
No.
Really?
We're not one of the highest, but we're also not one of the lowest. Kind of in the middle. Mid to high. Okay, I'll tell you. They're doing something really bad to Ukraine right now, is your clue.
Russia.
Yeah, Russia has one of the highest divorce rates, which is interesting. That one kind of surprised me. What state has, this one shouldn't be a surprise, if you think for a minute.
California?
No.
Nevada.
Yeah, Vegas, baby. Mm-hmm. Nevada, and I'm assuming because of Vegas, because there's a lot of weddings that didn't mean to happen. I don't know, could be wrong.
That's interesting because I feel like people get married there, but they might not live there. So it might not be where they get divorced.
That's a good point.
Alexa, well, maybe, you are picking apart these stats, which were diligently researched.
Yeah. And, well, the other one was Maine along with Nevada. So also no idea why. Didn't get to, you know, didn't keep reading. Okay. Let's Okay, so let's move on. Okay, I was going to define what a prenup is, but Alexa, since you're here, why don't you tell us what a prenup is?
Sure. So a prenuptial agreement or a prenup is an agreement that you make before you get married that can specify certain things that will take place during your marriage or in the event of a divorce.
And so it lists stuff like your assets, your debts. What are some other examples of something that it could list?
So typically the parties, and mind you, I'm just going to go ahead and preface this. Anything I say is related to Georgia law, so it may not be the same in any state. But here in Georgia, we do a full financial disclosure on the back. So both parties disclose all of their assets and debts so that there's, you know, a full understanding of the financial picture so that we know what rights we're giving away. Or what's being protected. And then other things that can be listed in a prenup are, you know, what's going to happen with each party's income during the marriage, what's going to happen with specific property that you're coming into the marriage with or that you might purchase during the marriage, businesses, other assets, other debts, things like that.
Okay. And I might be stating the obvious here, but statement/question, both parties have to agree to a prenup, right? Like, one person can't go make a prenup that their spouse does not agree to.
Right. So both parties need to fully agree. And so typically, you know, you see prenups that are generally fair. You know, there's a negotiation that goes into these things. Both parties' opinions are taken into account. And if a party feels like it's really unfair, they do not need to sign it. Now, granted, the alternative might be that you're not getting married, but it is something that needs to be discussed and agreed to.
Okay, that's super helpful. And I know you just said this, but just to double click on it for everyone and remind people, every state has their own laws. So a lot of what we're talking about and some of the examples you might give are from Georgia. But it's one of the many reasons, which we'll get into later, why you should consult with an attorney in your state if you're looking to, you know, create a prenup.
Absolutely. And not only are prenup laws different by state, but also property laws are different by state. So here in Georgia, we're an equitable division state if there was a divorce in the future. And that's very different than, you know, some of the other state laws in other states in terms of property. So how you protect your access would be totally different depending on the state.
Okay. So I think prenups are a great thing. An amazing thing, I would say, and people should not be afraid of them. I think they get a bad rap, which is unfair. And I actually want to go through a bunch of reasons why I actually think they're great and why they shouldn't have a bad rap and some kind of myth busting, if you will. But before we even get into those, this is again kind of a statement question, but like, I think a lot of people think that prenups are for like the uber wealthy and super rich people. And that couples of more modest means, or even like a couple that's comes in with a ton of debt or something, just sort of thinks like, oh, a prenup's not for me. Like, what do you think of that?
I think that's definitely not the case. I think, you know, a prenup, one of the great things about prenups, which you may or may not mention, is that it minimizes conflict if it were to come to a divorce. And so you've already kind of got it figured out for you. You know, the cost of an uncontested divorce versus a very contested divorce is astronomical. And so if you can figure out, you know, most of your financial settlement in a prenup prior to ever having to deal with a period in which you're not getting along, it can really minimize the conflict in a future divorce and therefore cut costs substantially for people that don't have the resources that you may be thinking of when you think of people who do a prenup.
Yeah, which is a point I'm going to get into in more detail in a second, because I think it's a huge point, a huge reason for creating one. So let's jump into all these reasons why prenups are a good thing. And then we'll get into some of the like really detailed information about like what you would want in a prenup and just that like things, kind of some Q&A that will help you better understand how to think about and start the process of creating a prenup. So first off, I recently heard this angle. I had a lot of my own like views on why I think prenups are a good thing, but I recently heard this. Mike, can you guess who I heard this from and like loved the point she made?
Liz Gets Loaded.
Look at you. You guys are on point for guessing things tonight. So Liz Gets Loaded, she actually read it in someone else's book, but was making the point in a post on Instagram recently. And I was like, that's an even better positioning of why it's so good. So if her point, and again, she was taking this from somebody else who we're not going to credit, I'm half joking. I just can't remember. So the point sort of is like everybody already has a prenup, right? Your state's laws dictate what happens if you were to get divorced. So if you don't have a prenup, you do. It's just your state's laws dictate them. You didn't like create your own. And her point is like, do I want my state to decide what happens in my marriage, you know, if something were to go wrong in it, or do I want to decide it for myself? And I just think that's like a really great point. I think she even quoted saying like, I'd personally prefer the state have very little say in my romantic relationship. I just love that angle on it, right? Every state's law varies, but ultimately they will dictate what happens if you don't have anything in writing. And, you know, I think the other point is just reminding people like marriage is a contract, right? Is it legally a contract, Alexa?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
You need to fill out a license for it, you know, or apply for a license for it. You know, I mean, I think certain, I wouldn't say that the government calls it a contract, but I know certain contract. Religions do.
You're right. So, we think of it as a contract. And the state, in the sense that the state, when you get divorced, there's laws related to like who gets what. I mean, that makes me feel like it sounds an awful lot like a contract, even if it, you know, legally is not one. And so the idea that like, you know, one of your spouse could take on a ton of debt during your marriage without telling you about it, and then that's your problem. If they then cheat on you and you get divorced, I mean, all sorts of reasons why, you know, marriage can break apart. Anyways, I think that point about like, you know, we all already have a prenup, which is the laws in our state. And so reframing it around that, I think just I hope would kind of change some people's view about what, you know, bad rap they might think of when they think about prenups. And then the other thing, which is like my biggest thing, and you kind of started to talk about this a minute ago, Alexa, is to me, like my number one reason for creating a prenup and for reframing it with everybody who thinks that they're, a lot of people think that they're like not romantic and you're not trusting your partner and why, you know, like, but if I love somebody and like, I'm a romantic, but I'm also a pragmatist, right? And like, and also in fairness, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I've been divorced before too, right? So I know what the state's laws are, right? And I know, and there's a lot of things that I never knew when I got married that are the law. And most people, no one tells you when you get married what the divorce laws are and what would happen if, you know, something went wrong in your marriage. But what is so interesting about reframing the idea of a prenup from anyone who thinks it's, you know, not romantic, and if you really love someone, you don't need something like that, is I actually think it's the opposite. If you really love someone, the kindest and most compassionate thing that you can do for that person at that point in your relationship, while you like are at this peak of love and compassion and kindness, is decide what you think is fair for everyone involved if something were to go wrong. Because nobody can predict what can happen in a marriage, from infidelity to someone just falling out of love to realizing that you're just not a good pair, to people lose children, like one of their children dies, and like the divorce rates are skyrocket high after that because it's such a difficult thing to go through. And so there's just all these things that nobody can predict, right? That you can't predict, your partner can't predict, whatever. And so the thought of being able to have like an open, honest, compassionate discussion about what you think is fair if your marriage were to end 5, 10, 20 years down the line, it feels like it's actually a nice gift you can give your about to be partner.
So let me give you my take on this, Maggie, because you and I have talked about this before, and I don't have a prenup. It's not something we really even considered. Like, all of your points make sense logically. And the way I think about it, and I think the way that a lot of, like, you know, the 97% of people who don't have prenups perhaps think about it, but maybe not in these exact terms, is that all of these things, it's sort of like an insurance policy. It is in the case that something goes wrong. And, you know, when we talked about insurance before in the show, it's frequency times severity. So like, what is the chance that something's going to happen? And what is the severity of that incident when it happens? In my case, I looked at my future, and I was, I think, a fairly mature when I was, you know, dating. When we made the decision to get married, I was like, I was mature.
How old were you?
We got married at 27. I'd have to go do that.
You seem unsure, but keep going.
I am unsure. But we didn't grow up in households that were divorced. We were very aligned in our lifestyles. We had done a lot of planning and talking about our lives. So when we looked at our lives, we thought, and we still think, that like the likelihood of us getting divorced is extremely low. It's not 50%. It's not 5%. It's like 0.5%. It's just so low that this is not something that we felt we needed to do because the risk of it was so small. Now, if I were to get divorced now and remarry, like I'm 40, I'm not going to change for somebody, you know, like the chances that I would remarry and somebody who was also divorced and like we would not get along, like the likelihood that that would end in divorce, I think in my mind would be much greater. And I certainly would get a prenup. But back when I was originally getting married, I didn't see this as like a high enough risk to go through the exercise.
It's funny you say that. First off, I think you're spot on the reference to insurance, right? And you are you are like pretty, I was going to say like anti-insurance, but like you're very conservative on like how much you'll insure things for. And like, cause you know the model, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so I'm not surprised just in general on your views. But I would say actually what's interesting is your comment about like getting married later in life and like the chances of divorce versus when you're younger. Cause I actually think from my own experience, actually, which again is what we always talk about. I have no data to back this point up. My own experience, like I got married when I was 23, 23.
Yeah. See, you don't know it either.
It was in my early 20s. I was a lot changes between when you're 23 and 33, I'll put it that way, in terms mm-hmm. of like who you are and what you know that you want and all that. So I actually think, you know, I agree on your point on like, I'm not going to change and you know, all that. But we'd find you, if something were to happen, Britta's great, but we'd find you some fire wife. Don't worry, Mike. Yeah, there's a fire. Remember we did our dating episode?
Oh, yeah.
There's a fire dating app, you know, we'd figure it out.
I actually do think there's something to age. I think the older you mm-hmm. get, the more likely you are to either want and or need a prenup. I'm not the person that thinks that everybody needs a prenup, but especially as people get married later and later, they're yeah. more likely to need yeah. a prenup because they're coming into the marriage with more assets.
Kids from a previous marriage. Yeah, a lot of things. And it gets super complicated.
Definitely.
I remember sometimes sitting down and doing our wills and estate planning with your partner, Alexa, mm-hmm. and then also just some of the prenup discussions with you and the questions that you get asked. You're like, I never thought of this scenario. And like, especially when you're doing estate planning, guys, it's depressing. They start throwing out, like, what if that person died? I'm like, well, geez, they can't all die. Like,
yeah,
this would be terrible.
You know, Maggie, so going back to your point, you reminded me about something. Going back to your point about doing something that's compassionate for the people in your life.
Yeah.
That is the reason that I did a will and an estate plan. But there is a 100% chance that I'm going to die.
Yes.
And so, like, I definitely need yeah. this. And it's definitely yeah. going to be valuable. Just, you know, a prospect of divorce, I didn't see as a high enough probability.
Yeah. Well, and you, like you said, you guys came in with like more similar, mm-hmm. less and just like similar-ish financial situations.
Yeah.
So another reason, though, that I think is just back to the point about like all the questions and the scenarios you have to think through when you're creating these documents is I almost think the process of going through a prenup with a lawyer in particular is a little bit of like premarital counseling. Like you're forced to have some discussions that many couples, like we've had a lot of, we talk to a lot of people who write us in questions and are sharing situations about their relationships and other things. They have like not great communication, especially regarding finances with their partner. It's often one of the most stressful topics in a marriage, in a relationship. And what's interesting is it like, again, just going through the process forces you to have these discussions. So you have to put together this financial, what do they call it? Financial affidavit. What do you call it?
You can call it a financial affidavit, a financial disclosure. Yeah.
And I actually was reading Greg and I's, we did our prenup in 2017 and I was reading ours last night just to refresh my own memory for like the full document and what's in it. And I was kind of reading some stuff to Greg and I was like, oh, you remember this and this. And then
you figure out some stuff you want.
I was
to
like,
change.
don't leave me. Do you remember this? But I was in there. It had this it had the summary of like all of our financial assets from 2017. And it was fascinating because I was like, especially actually, it was making me feel really good because the market is like sucking right now. And so it was like, I was repositioning it to Greg and I was like, I know you think our 401ks look like really terrible and all of our brokerage accounts like look terrible right now. But I was like, let me tell you what they were in 2017, Greg. And they like look massive compared to that. So it was like, it was kind of fun to go back and look at them. But my point is, you're forced to have some important financial discussions. And if you can't, if those discussions are too awkward for you to have, I'm just going to go out on a limb. You should not be marrying somebody if you cannot have those conversations. I feel we've talked about this in some other like relationship and like talking to partners about finances episodes. Like if you guys cannot have an open and honest discussion about financial stuff, that's a huge red flag in my opinion.
Absolutely. In fact, I would say it's one of the top causes of divorces that I see are people who are not aligned financially.
Yeah,
and
so
if you go through the prenup process and you've talked it out and you know you're on the same page, that like immediately checks off a huge problem that could arise later in your relationship.
Yeah. And it prompts discussions too. Like if someone's coming in with some debt, a lot of people get married and they don't fully know the extent of student loan debt or whatever debt someone's coming in with. All the time you hear stories like that. And so it makes you have a discussion about it and say, okay, well, hey, should we pay this off? I mean, there's just a lot of things that it could be helpful for. And then, you know, on the money angle too, I would say, you said this earlier, Alexa, in the end, best case, you have a happy marriage and you never use your prenup. And yes, you could argue that was a wasted amount of money, but that's kind of how insurance works too, Mike, to your point, right? Like I have to have car insurance legally, right? But it's not like if I never have an accident, I'm not like, oh God, I wasted all that money on car insurance. I'm like knock on wood, thank goodness I never had an accident, right? So that's kind of how I think about the investment in if I never need my prenup, that's good news, right? I don't want to ever have to use it. But at the same time, if I did have to use it, it's probably going to save me money in the end because contested divorces, Alexa, to your point earlier, are really expensive. And especially if you're having to like have a lawyer sit there and like watch you guys argue about stuff, lawyers are expensive and well worth it when you need one, but expensive to just watch you argue about stuff that you could have worked out again when you were in love and compassionate and kind and wanting to do the right thing by someone. And look, relationships can get really, I'm sure you see it. I cannot even imagine the things you see, Alexa. And I know you can't tell us about any of them, but
people argue over all kinds of things.
Things get dirty and they get even worse with kids involved.
Absolutely. But people get petty when they're mad. Yep. And if you can take that out of the equation, it really helps.
Yeah. So the point is, in the end, having a prenup, if your marriage, again, not what we're hoping for anyone, were to end in divorce, it actually likely will save you a lot of money because you've already worked out a lot of this stuff in advance. But on that note, we'll get into this a little bit more, but you actually, for your prenup to actually hold up, you actually do need to do a lot of things like specifically right for it to actually like be something that a judge would uphold during divorce proceedings. But we'll talk more about that because we're about to jump into a bunch of questions for Alexa specifically.
Alexa, was all of that accurate?
I believe
so. Let me rephrase the question. Was any of it accurate?
That's a better way to accurate. I think, you know, prenups are about relationships and their relationships with finances, their relationships with each other. And so, you know, they definitely, I've never drafted the same prenup twice. You know, I mean, I definitely change them a lot depending on who's coming in and what they think is fair and what they want to do with their finances. And there are lots of different options. And so, you know, I think any way you look at it, if it makes it seem fair to you, then it's perfect. I think the way you summarized it was a great way of looking at a prenup overall.
Good.
Cool.
So, Alexa, time for some questions.
Sure.
You said a few minutes ago, you were not someone who thinks all people should get prenups. So who should get a prenup?
So basically, I think, you know, anybody who has property going into the marriage So whether that be a house or a business or large amounts of assets of any type, really, should think about a prenup. Not necessarily because state law, you know, state law in Georgia, what you come into the marriage with is technically your separate property regardless. But a lot of the time in marriages, there's gray area, you know, so I use my separate bank account to buy us a marital house. Now it's commingled and it's real messy. You know, if you sell your separate property house and then use that money towards the marital house, once again, big problem. And then those things come up all the time. So if you're going into a marriage and you've got a fair amount of property of any sort, I think it's a good idea to consider a prenup. It's also a good idea if you own or plan to own a business, if you plan to receive a notable inheritance. Basically, if you're getting married and there's a fair amount of wealth disparity, it's a good thing to consider. Now, if you're getting married, you know, right out of college, neither of you haven't much at all, and you're fine with all of your stuff being equal or about equal, then you may not want to consider a prenup. So it is a personal decision.
So let me ask you a follow-up question to one point you made. Mm-hmm. You talked about the co-mingling of funds, and you gave an example that I think is very common for people where somebody might own a house. So like, you know, Maggie, you know, Greg came into your, we're going to talk about your personal situation.
Go for it.
Greg came into the relationship with a house. It is currently rented, but at some point you're probably going to sell that and you will probably use the proceeds from that house along with Maggie, some of your money to go buy another rental property or two more rental properties. And then that continues. If you have a prenup and it says that house is Greg's, but this commingling happens, how does the prenup help, or are you required to keep those, like, track of the transfer of funds during these purchases?
So I always suggest keeping track of where down payments came from. But a lot of that is all, you know, organized into a prenup that covers things like that in advance. So the prenup can protect against the issues that arise in commingling assets. That said, it's not going to keep track of the numbers for you. It's just a piece of paper. So you do have to kind of keep a basic calculation of where down payments are coming from. But provided you do that, you can account for all of that in advance. Now, if you're changing things a whole bunch of times and it's looking really, really messy, you may want to update a prenup.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So when you update a prenup, is that when it's called a postnup, or is it really just an updated prenup?
You can do it as a postnup, which is like sort of a whole new agreement, or you can just do an addendum to your prenup, which is a lot easier. So it's almost like the difference between doing a whole new will or doing a codicil to your will, which is just, you know, one little issue is being changed. And so it sort of depends on how much of a change you're looking for. So if what we're doing is changing financial disclosures and just clarifying whose property is whose, then you can do that as an addendum to a prenup rather than like a whole new document.
Okay. So a couple follow-up questions on this. Do you let's say I do have a prenup with you. We did, and actually using that example that Mike just did, right? We did ours back in 2017. We've purchased additional rental properties. We generally, I think, had some statements that like rental properties were kind of, you know, 50-50. But if things, you know, in a meaningful way change financially in your relationship over time, do you recommend that people actually do adjust their prenup to document that?
It really depends on the specific prenup and whether or not whatever change it is already covered. So like a lot of changes that take place naturally over the course of a relationship are covered in a prenup already. And then there's some changes that are just kind of out there. If you're trading out a rental property for another rental property, no, I don't think you need to go through the whole process of redoing a prenup.
Okay, interesting. And while we're, since we mentioned it a couple of times, can you tell us what a postnup is and kind of how it's different and when people might want that versus a prenup?
Sure. So a postnuptial agreement is very similar to a prenuptial agreement, except for that you sign it and, you know, draft and sign it after you're married. So you can do a postnuptial agreement really at any time. Most people that are doing a postnuptial agreement didn't do a prenup and now they've decided that they'd like a contract. Mm-hmm. Typically, you see it in situations. I mean, you usually see it either right when people first get married and they just didn't get to a prenup and now they want to figure things out, or if people have been married for a while and there's an issue in their marriage and they just want to define things a little bit more clearly. Those are when I usually see those. I would say that they're much less common than a prenuptial agreement.
Postnups in general. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I do, as much as I'm like pro prenups, I was starting to think about what a conversation would feel and look like to bring up to your spouse, you know, 5, 10, however many years into marriage, or a couple months, whatever, that you want to do a postnuptial agreement, you know, and like why, you know, and just, you know, that feels actually harder than like just doing a prenup.
I would say so. Those I find to be a bit more awkward, especially not the ones that take place right after a wedding, but the ones that are further into a marriage, they can be really interesting. Yeah. Another reason to do a postnup, though, would be if one party was about to receive a huge inheritance or had just received a huge inheritance.
That's interesting.
Inheritances in Georgia are considered separate property, but it gets really debatable when things are commingled again. So a postnup isn't a bad idea if you're about to receive an inheritance.
That's interesting. When we were saying, just you saying it could be an awkward discussion, I was trying to picture when you're like, well, I want one now because I realized how bad you are with your finances and we don't seem aligned and I want to protect myself. And like, you know, there's probably a nicer way to say that, but could get more awkward. Okay. So a big question, because Mike and I especially, and many people in the FIRE space, a little frugal, like to DIY things, like to, you know, go to some website and find a template for something and think like, oh, I could create my own will, which I once did before I went and did like a proper will and estate planning, which we did an episode on. But what is the benefit, and or, you know, why do you need to go to an actual attorney, lawyer to create a prenup versus DIYing this?
For enforceability. So I think, you know, judges are looking at these things if there's a dispute as to whether or not the prenup is valid. If you had an attorney draft it, it is substantially more likely to be enforceable. So when I'm doing, you know, an uncontested divorce and the other party is like, yeah, this all looks good, I don't require them typically to have an attorney review it with them if they feel comfortable. With a prenup, I generally almost always have the other party review it with an attorney, even if they think it looks fine. And that's so that you can say, you know, hey, look, they reviewed it with an attorney, they know what's in there, they felt comfortable with it, and that attorney is willing to say, okay, yeah, my name's in there, you know, I reviewed it with this person, they knew what they were signing.
Yeah. And just to share a personal experience, like when I went to you to do one, yeah, you shouldn't represent Greg and I.
Couldn't, yeah.
Can't actually, right? You were representing me, I hired you. That was one of the first things you said is like, for this to be legit, Greg, you need to hire, and you recommended someone, mm-hmm. but like, you know, it wasn't as much of a cost on their end because they weren't drafting all the paper. They were reviewing the paperwork and then they were giving Greg counsel. And I wasn't like in that meeting, right? Like Greg went and had a meeting with that lawyer and I don't even know what happened, but, and you know, he felt consulted and, you know, got a second opinion, if you want to call it that, but that person is legally representing him and telling him what's is and isn't in his best interest. And then he gets to make his own decision about, you know, what he does not agree to. I think that to me was something I never knew at the time.
Yeah. You want to make sure that both parties very clearly understand what they're signing with a prenup and that, you know, there was no duress, there was no undue influence, you know, there was nothing forcing them to sign this agreement that made them really uncomfortable, because those are some of the reasons that prenups could potentially be, you know, not enforced by the court.
So there's something else I think is worth clarifying to people. You mentioned this really briefly, Alexa, but when you were referring to, you know, the judge reviewing the prenup and taking that into account, like during divorce proceedings, any contract for, like, I dealt with legal and lawyers a lot at work. And so I've, and Mike, I think you probably have also. So I deal with this from a business standpoint all the time. But I think most people know that, like, even when you have a contract, like when you have a non-compete with your company, doesn't mean you can't still go leave and get a job with another company. It just means they could sue you over it, right? And they have more of a ground. So all of these documents written on paper, you can still, like, they're just, I don't even know, I'm not going to just define that in the legal way, Alexa. I'm sure there's an actual legal statement or reference, but you know what I'm talking about? Like, the idea that that is still just a piece of paper. You still have to go deal with a judge when you get divorced, and they can choose to either honor it or not, and they're going to make a ruling on it. And so I think it's just worth reminding people that with any contract, it's not ironclad, right?
Right. I have never seen a prenup actually not be enforced by a court. And in fact, I think in every case I've had where there was a prenup, the parties were able to agree to an uncontested settlement. So we never even really had to file the prenup. I was involved in a case where my client prior to my representation had tried to say that the prenup should not be held as valid. And you know, when he came to me, I took a look at it and said, this is an enforceable prenup, and I don't think you're going to get away with trying to get rid of it at this point.
So what if I went and just found like a template online and created my own prenup with my partner, and we filled out the template and signed it, and then we get divorced, you know, 10 years later. But I say to the judge, like, I have no idea what we signed. I don't know. We went and found some template online. I didn't know what I was doing. Like, is that a scenario where the judge would kind of take pity on me is the wrong word, but say like, she didn't even know what she was signing?
They very well could. Yeah. Okay. Especially where there were no lawyers involved and it was a template from online. You know, there are a lot of nuances that go into a prenup. There's some specific language that Georgia really likes to have in there. You know, there are certain states that, Georgia, for example, doesn't really want a prenup that says, you know, in contemplation of divorce. It's supposed to be in contemplation of a long-lasting marriage. And so, you know, if you screw up some of this language, you know, it can cause your prenup to have enforceability problems. Now, if both of you look at that prenup and you're like, you know what, this is what I signed, this is what I meant, and it's fine, and neither of you try and, you know, contest it, there's no problem. But as soon as one of you contests it, if it's a poorly drafted prenup, it's very likely to be held unenforceable.
Okay.
So you've talked a lot about, I guess, the nature and the purpose of the prenup. I'm interested, though, in some specifics about what can a prenup do and what can a prenup not do? And can you give us like some real world examples for both types of categories?
Like, here's an example.
I'm asking Alexa.
I'm going to give Alexa, I want you to work this example into your answer.
Sure.
Can I put in there that Greg has to take out the trash every Sunday night?
Technically, yes. I think you could put that in there. I've actually never had somebody try and throw something like that into like a prenup.
Household duties or something.
Yeah, actually really I haven't good done a whole lot of that, but there's nothing that says that you can't. So long as you're careful not to do anything that's like unconscionable. So you can't ask somebody to do something that's illegal. You can't ask somebody to do something that they can't do, you know, possibly. Like, so for example, if you said, you know, Greg, you need to take out the trash, but now Greg is really sick and can't get out of bed, you know, he may not be able to do that. So you're probably not going to like win some type of contempt against him for that. Not that we do contempts on prenups, but, you know, there's not really any there's not really any way to enforce it unless you get divorced and then you can just say he should have done that. So I don't know if it would be super worthwhile.
Greg's been taken out of the trash, but you could get us back on track. Okay, what can a prenup have and what can't it?
Sure. So
sounds like the trash is in the maybe category.
Trash is in the maybe, but why would you bother category?
fair.
But basically what a prenup can do is it can protect your premarital property. And so one of the things that I really like about a prenup is that it's a good baseline. You've got your financial disclosure at the back. It says exactly what was in all of your accounts and what the value of your stuff was on the date of marriage or right when you signed your prenup. And so, you know, if it's a long lasting marriage and they're getting divorced and they're trying to figure out what was separate property versus what was marital property and you have a prenup, you've got a really clear starting point, which makes it much, much easier because I can tell you that banks don't keep statements forever. And it's really hard to figure out sometimes what the value was way back when. So it can protect your premarital property. It can, you know, protect an inheritance. It can protect a business. You can put in language about alimony, whether that be a total ban on alimony, any sort of creative language to determine what alimony would be and for how long, or in what circumstances alimony is a thing. Oftentimes people put in that alimony would be left up to state law, which in Georgia, I find to be fairly fair anyway. But people often don't think about the fact that, you know, your income during the marriage can also be determined as per your prenup rather than as per state law. So in Georgia, everybody's income is marital during the marriage. So that means that all the money that you make is marital, unless in your prenup you're saying that it's not. So you have the ability to reallocate what is marital in your prenup, which often people do, and say that maybe their income is going to be separate unless they put it in a joint account, or something like that. So you can definitely earmark your earnings. You can also talk about what happens if you go into debt together or if one of you goes into debt separately. So your example earlier, Maggie, where you were talking about somebody going into a ton of debt during the marriage and all of a sudden it becomes your problem. You can definitely put language in a prenup that says that if one of you contracts for some type of debt, whether it be a credit card or whatever else, you know, a loan, if they do that in their own sole name, that is their own sole problem. So that's a great protection that you can put in a prenup. So you can include language in a prenup about pets. In Georgia, pets are considered property. So there is no custody of pets, but you could technically write a custodial arrangement for pets, or you could say who the pet goes to or whatever you want involving pets, which is something.
That's a fascinating one that I hadn't thought about, but that is, again, back to the like compassionate example of like a lot of people come in with some pet that they had already had for. And it's very different. I don't want to say it's different than a child, but
I mean, some people consider pets their child, but Georgia law gives you no ability if you were to go to court over that to consider a pet a child, even if that's how you feel about it.
And the only reason I meant it was different than everyone considers them their children. I only meant it was different as in like people don't do joint custody usually of pets when they break up the way that they would with children. And
some people do. Believe it or not. Yeah.
Wow. That's fascinating.
I've actually sent the pets with the kids oftentimes.
Well, I was going to say, I have heard of people with kids where they do it, but I guess I've not heard of like people without kids who still interact to trade off pets.
I've seen it. But it has to be by agreement in Georgia law, or you have to put it in your prenup, because if you go to court over a pet, it's either going to one person or the other, and there's no ability to have the court do a custodial arrangement. And so, you know, some people want that, some people don't, but it's something that you can agree to.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. In the alternative, what a prenup will not allow you to do is state anything about child custody or support, because both of those things need to be determined in the best interest of the children at the time of a divorce. Which is a good thing if you really think about it.
So with all that and everything we've talked about, are there any big differences with same-sex couples that people should consider?
Not really. Typically, I mean, I consider a same-sex couple just as absolutely the same as a heterosexual couple in terms of it's a marriage is a marriage. That said, given the current political climate, they might want some type of statement that if their marriage is later deemed to be invalid, that their prenuptial agreement still remains to be an enforceable contract. I haven't had anybody do that, but it's not a bad idea just given what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
I also wanted to throw out there that it's not solely a same-sex issue, but if a couple has embryos or any genetic matter frozen, there should be a separate agreement for that. Typically, I don't put that in prenuptial agreements just because there's usually a separate either surrogacy contract or, you know, embryo contract with that company, but that is something that could technically be put into a prenup.
Wow. I never thought about that before, but that seems like that would be high emotion if there was something like that involved.
But when you see some of those famous couples and they're getting divorced and they're trying to determine whether they're going to, you know, if somebody's going to be able to create a baby with those frozen embryos, it's something that you should have really handled. And they probably did handle well before freezing those embryos in the first place.
So, Alexa, we covered a ton of fascinating information. And in case you couldn't tell, like Maggie and I were just like peppering you with the questions. We're not going to get a bill for this, are we?
No. Okay, great. I got to get in all my questions tonight.
Yeah, so we're like personally very curious.
My only freebie with Alexa.
Because we're a personal finance show, I think the one question most people would have on their minds is, on average, what might it cost somebody to hire an attorney like yourself to go through this process?
So, I mean, all attorneys are different in terms of what they charge. I will tell you, for me, typically prenups cost somewhere between $2,500 and $4,000. It depends on the complexities of the case. It depends on how much negotiation is needed. I do just charge an hourly rate on a retainer for prenups, so I don't do flat fees for those types of documents, because you just never really know, you know, how complicated it's going to become. Oftentimes, you know, what I always suggest to people is this should be a conversation that you've had with your partner before coming to my office. I don't recommend springing it on people. So oftentimes my clients have already talked to the other party about it. They know generally what they want, and there isn't like a huge amount of negotiation, which makes it a lot more affordable. It's the ones where, you know, all of a sudden a party comes and they've got something that's really out there and it throws the other party for a loop. You know, I had one a couple years ago where, I believe the husband wanted the wife to not work, but also didn't want to pay her any alimony.
Feels like those two things do not work together.
Right. And she was not having it. And so there was a lot of back and forth and it got pretty nasty. Those can be a lot more expensive.
That's also a big red flag. As soon as that statement was made in front of me, I'd be like, peace. I gotta go. Like, you know.
Yeah, that may have been what she said.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just definitely depends on the level of complexity and also the level of, you know, understanding between the parties as going into it, what to expect.
Yeah.
And if memory serves me, Maggie, I think that's about the same cost as the will and estate planning rough estimates we got from Elaine many years ago. Right?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more. I mean, it depends. I think there's even more complexities sometimes with will and estate planning. I think it's the same thing that Alexa was saying in terms of just the complexity, right? Yeah. So like when Greg and I did our wills, right, we're both previously married. So we've got kids from other marriages. There's a lot more you have to state in a second marriage situation with wills. And so anyways, it can vary. But yeah, it was ballpark, you know, pre-inflation, but ballpark similar numbers.
So one thing Elaine said to us, though, that I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Alexa, that, you know, this was roughly what it costs. But if someone charges you $300 for a will, it's probably not going to do what you want it to do. Would you say the same thing about prenups?
I would. You know, nobody is charging $300 to take the time and the energy to think about your situation, counsel you through it, and draft you up a really good document. You know, I think it takes some experience to know a lot of the things that need to go into a prenup. It takes a long time to really fine tune your language and, you know, how you approach certain things. And I think if somebody is charging you $300, there's got to be a reason, because these things take some time.
Yeah. Well, for anyone who has sticker shock on that amount, which I don't, I mean, I have sticker shock on all amounts when anyone throws something to me. So it doesn't matter
too,
if it's like $5. Yeah. A couple of things I'd say. One, like you were saying, you get what you pay for. The other thing is people spend so much money on engagement ring around the process of getting married, on engagement rings, on your wedding, like tons of money. So, I mean, not everybody. Some people are doing it, you know, a little bit more frugal and on a budget. But it's like, if you're not willing to do that again, I'm not knocking it. It's not for everybody. It's like all things we talk about finance related. It's personal finance. It is a personal decision on what makes sense for you. But if you think this makes sense for you, I would just think about all the money that is spent around the process of getting married, from engagement to parties to weddings to everything else, and think like it's not a lot of money when you put it in that perspective. Okay, what else, Alexa? Is there anything else that we have not talked about related to prenups that you think is important to point out before we wrap this episode up?
Yes. So one thing is the timing. So oftentimes people come to me and they're like, okay, so I'm really interested in a prenup. I'm getting married next week. Don't do that. You definitely want to give some lead time for several reasons. Number one is it takes a little while to draft a prenup. And especially as we discussed earlier, when the other party is going to have this reviewed with another attorney, we're all busy. We need some time to have that back and forth. I usually recommend starting like 3 or 4 months out from your wedding to give yourself plenty of time so that you don't have to worry about it right before your wedding. The other reason for that is because one of the things that we discussed earlier that could be an issue to enforceability is duress. And so what you don't want to do is say to your spouse or spouse-to-be, you know, we need to sign this prenup before our wedding in 3 days, because that tends to really stress people out and could cause somebody to do something that they might not want to do otherwise. And so, you know, if the further out from your wedding you are when you sign your prenup, the better off you are in terms of trying to make an argument that there was no duress. The closer you are to a wedding, the more likely somebody's going to say, okay, well, if I don't sign this, I'm going to have to call 300 guests and tell them that we're not having a wedding. And that can be a big problem. So, you know, I have definitely drafted prenups for people at the last minute, because people definitely wait until the last minute. But for good measure, I really recommend doing it a couple of months out. For the people that do wait until the last minute, I've always had them do what I call a postmarital endorsement of their prenup. So a couple weeks or a month after their wedding, I have them come back in, sign something that just says, look, you know, I didn't sign it because I was under duress. You know, I totally knew what I was signing, still would sign it now that we're married. Everything's fine. Right. And is that a perfect fix? No, but I think it's the best fix I've got with the timeline that I was given. So I definitely think it's helpful, but, you know, you're best off just getting on it early.
Yeah, I love that. We said that was going to be the last thing, but one bonus question.
Sure.
Because we did ask our Instagram followers if they had questions about prenups, and we covered all of them already except one, which is a good question. And I think a pretty fairly quick answer.
Is it from Greg?
It's not from Greg, no. And it's not from me. But it's two different people asked kind of the same question. If you have kids not together, important things to include. So, and the other question was like, how detailed are they regarding kids from a previous relationship and money for them?
So typically in a prenup, there isn't a huge amount of coverage regarding kids from a previous marriage, except to state that neither of you are responsible for paying for the other person's kids. That's something that's often handled more in estate planning documents, because you definitely want to handle that there very, very detailed and carefully. In a prenup, there are certain measures you can take, especially if you make a lot of references to your estate planning, just to state that, you know, somebody is not going to try and take property that was meant for the other person's kids. And so that is something that you can clarify in a prenup, sort of, kind of, but really the right place for it would be really solid estate planning.
That is very helpful. Thank you. Well, just in general, thank you, because we really appreciate you coming on. Like we were only half joking about at the beginning, all these conversations, particularly one like this, is so much more valuable when we bring on a true expert like yourself. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is great.
Yeah. Mike, you going to go do a post-nup now?
No, I'm not. But this has been extremely enlightening. And I appreciate you coming on the show. And I'm sure other people are going to find this equally fascinating. It's certainly not something that people talk about openly, and therefore don't have very good insight into the mechanics of it, myself included. So thank you very much. This was great.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Alexa, and have a great night. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Appreciate you listening. If you've been challenged or inspired by what you have heard today, please rate and review the show. It's super helpful when you leave us a positive rating on Apple Podcasts.
If you have any thoughts or questions, we'd love to hear from you. And you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370 or hit us up on Instagram.